Hello, all sentient beings, and welcome to Transmissions Alt Mode, where we talk about all news, comics, and media related to the... On this episode of Transmissions Alt Mode, we review Dreamwave's Transformers Issue 5, IDW furloughs creators, and we get a look at some Transformers Forged to Fight concept art. Today is Friday, May 22nd, 2020, and this is episode 182 of Transmissions Alt Mode.
Welcome to Transmissions Alt Mode, the podcast that knows if you don't take a test, then you can't fail it. Right? I'm your host, Charles, a.k.a. Big C, and I'm joined by the excellent Transmissions team, Jeremy, a.k.a. Yakko.
My 10 years of getting a bachelor's degree will disagree with that statement, Charles. How are you doing?
I'm fine. How are you?
I'm great.
I'm being Yoshi tonight. The amazing and awesome producer and editor, Mike.
I once failed a test I didn't know I was taking.
And Daryl, the Cybertronian beast.
I'm all about keeping my grades low. So let's talk Transformers.
All right. And again, we mentioned this in the toy show, but we'll also mention it here. Our condolences to Fred Willard's family. He passed away this week at the age of 86. He's a well-known actor, been in lots of things, very funny guy, had lots of roles. But of course, we're a Transformers podcast, so we have to mention that he was the voice of Swendell in Transformers Animated. So, that's his connection to Transformers. We condolences to his family, wish them well, and sorry for their loss. All right, as always, we start the show off by thanking our Donatrions, those lovely people who give us money on Patreon and PayPal and help keep the show going. If you'd like to become a Donatrion, just go to transmissionspodcast.com/support. You can also help us out by buying merchandise at our T Public store. That is at transmissionspodcast.com/shop. And you can also check out K-Girl's store at tpublic.com/user/superstarK. We've got shirt designs. We've got masks. All our designs can be turned into masks or shirts. So check them out if you're interested. See what you like and help out the show. This week, this Monday coming up, we will have episode 24 of Empire of Rust, Ship of Fools. This is coming on Memorial Day holiday, Monday, May 25th. Mike, any teasers for episode 24 off the top of your head?
I will say that it wraps up an interesting little mini arc, and we start moving on to something new, something different at the end of that episode. So it's going to take a bit of a turn.
Ooh, interesting. Plot twist.
What a twist.
Yes, the check out the first and only Transformers RPG podcast run by Mike and his crew of Heroes of Iacon.
And thanks to everyone who has commented and offered words of encouragement. Whenever you do, I always share them with the rest of the cast. So they are certainly grateful to hear it. So keep them coming and stop by our Discord chat and say hi to them.
Make sure you let them out of the basement every now and then to get some fresh air, eh?
I'm afraid the chains don't go that far.
Oh, well, at least they know that they're appreciated.
Yeah.
That's nice.
All right, let's start off the show talking about some comics news. Okay, so first up, we've got some cover art from Jack Lawrence. He put this out on Twitter he put the lines and the full color cover for issue 20 of the Transformers regular main series. It's cool. It's Hound hanging out with some aliens. Issue 20 was supposed to come out in April, but of course it's been delayed like all the other comics, due to the pandemic. But yeah, this cover is It's cool. I like Hound.
Did you mention Josh Perez did the covers or colors?
Oh, I did not mention that. Josh Perez did the colors.
Did you mention Jack Lawrence did the pencils?
Well, yes, I did.
Oh, did you mention Josh Perez did the colors?
Yes. Yes, Daryl.
And what about Jack Lawrence?
Did you discuss why there's a star on Hound's shoulder?
I guess that's the Cybertronian defense badge, security defense badge, pre-Autobot Decepticon War. Sure, yeah. Because he hasn't come to Earth yet, so he can't have like a any U.S. Iconography on him.
Mm-hmm.
Other than looking exactly like a Jeep.
John Barber did say, and something we'll talk about in convention news, that this one has been printed and it's sitting in Diamond's warehouse.
Oh, okay.
It was due to come out, right after the pandemic shut everything down, or I guess right after Diamond decided to shut everything down.
Hmm.
And so it's been printed, and I think he said he's expecting it to be early June, but who knows at this point.
All right. Well, we'll see. I'm missing my Transformers comics, so hopefully things will start coming back.
I can tell you I'm missing the Transformers versus Terminator one. I have not missed this one.
Yes, I know. All right, the other bit of news is this is from Bleeding Cool, so it's a little bit clickbaity, but it is interesting because they mentioned that IDW got the Paycheck Protection Program, that is the loans that the U.S. federal government is giving out to have businesses keep their workers on the payrolls. So IDW is the IDW Media Holdings has several different subsidiaries, including IDW Publishing. So this loan was spread out among them all. But, it's not a great look when the company's getting loans to keep people on the payroll, but they are furloughing some of their regular employees, giving them medical benefits, but still furloughing them. And, of course, they're not paying freelancers because they're not commissioning any new work. So,
and freelancers aren't covered by these loans anyway.
Right. That's true. But so that's why I said the Bleeding Cool article is a tiny bit misleading, because they're saying furloughing creators, where they're not actually, you can't furlough freelancers since they're freelancers and, they get paid by commission, not by, they don't have regular paycheck. So, but yeah.
And also it doesn't tell you, you don't see exactly how they're using the loan. So who knows if it went to the publishing side at all, maybe it went to their art gallery or, there's just, all we know is they got the loan mm-hmm. for the holding company. It's a very clickbaity.
Yeah.
Can you just tell people what furloughed means? Cause we don't use that word here in Canada. I had to look it up.
Okay. Well, furloughed is you're not firing or laying off your worker, but you're saying, okay, for temporarily you don't come into work, but we're also not paying you. So
it is a layoff.
It's not, they're not terminated or you could call it a temporary layoff, I guess, but you're still kept on the books and on the payroll.
I see.
But it's like a forced unpaid leave of absence for a limited amount of time.
You're still technically considered an employee. Mm-hmm. And yeah. Once the furlough is done, then you would presumably go back to work. But effectively, it's no different than a layoff.
Yeah.
Gotcha. Yeah. Right. No,
I would imagine you're not able to go for unemployment stuff.
Yep.
Right. Yeah. That's the distinction. Yep. Yeah.
Yeah. That kind of sucks. Yeah. No, I've been seeing the word thrown around a lot, and obviously it's in the US because nobody here it's just been laid off. You've been laid off. Everyone's doing layoffs and nobody's been furloughed. So
my wife has been told she has to take 30 hours, like furlough 30 hours. And she's confused because as a like an academic researcher, she's 100% paid by a grant. Oh. She's like, the university she works for doesn't actually contribute to her salary. Why are they getting to dictate this? Mm. But they are.
Mm. Interesting.
But she has to do it over like 6 months, so she can do like a day a month or something. Mm.
Yeah, and the big thing here in the U.S., of course, you don't have this issue in Canada, but in the U.S., you know, your job is usually tied to your health benefits. So, you know, the big thing for IDW's employees is that they're still getting health benefits even while they're furloughed, which, yeah, that's, you know, in Canada, of course you get health benefits because it's, you know, it's paid through your taxes. Mm-hmm. But here it's, you know, that security is not present for a lot of people, for most people. So
sucks. Well, thank you for clearing that up.
All right, let's move on to our comic review. All right, this week we are reviewing Dreamwave Transformers Generation 1, Volume 1, Number 5. Written by Chris Saracini, pencils by Pat Lee, inks by Rob Armstrong and Eric Sander, backgrounds by Edwin Garcia, colors by Ramil Sunga, Gary Young, Alan Wang, flats by Kenny Lee, letters by Dreamer Design, prepress Kello Graphics, edits by Matt Moylan, and graphic design by Kevin Lee. So we've got actually, I guess, three covers this week. So the first two covers were the first printing, but then there was a second printing. So, okay, the first cover is Blaster and His Cassettes Minus Rewind. That's by Pat Lee. And then the second cover is Soundwave and His Cassettes, also by Pat Lee. And then the alternate cover is Devastator and Reflector versus Perceptor on the back. So it's a kind of a gatefold cover. All right, Daryl, which cover would you pick?
Well, seeing the second printing cover, which I think this is probably the first time I've ever seen it, I like this one. It looks awesome. I just have a real soft spot for this Devastator. It looks fun. The Optimus is not drawn in the standard, you know, Dreamwave style, so it actually looks decent. So yeah, I like it. This is probably, yeah, this would be my favorite. The other ones are great, though. I mean, I really do like the other two covers. But this Devastator cover is fun. I guess we really don't know who drew it, do we? Is it in the wiki there?
I think it's Guido Guidi. It says in the wiki it's Guido Guidi.
Oh, okay, cool.
So, Jeremy, which cover are you picking?
I like the two, like the Blaster and the Soundwave covers. I guess if I had to pick, it would probably be the Blaster cover because the coloring on that one I like a lot better. It seems, I don't know, the Soundwave one, it might even just be the copy we're looking at, but it just seems a little washed out.
Hmm. Okay, Mike, which cover are you picking?
I'm actually going to go with the Soundwave one. Because although I like the colors on the Blaster one, like Jeremy said, I dislike how Eject is taking up like half of the cover, and he's not that detailed or that interesting a bot to look at. Rumble and Frenzy don't take up as much of Soundwave's cover, and you can see like more of the detail on like Laserbeak and Soundwave and all that. So I think in terms of quality, it's kind of a toss-up between Blaster or Soundwave. Both of them, I think, are equally good in terms of how good they look. I just think compositionally, the Soundwave one is a bit better.
I am going to also pick the Soundwave cover. I think
yes,
that's suck yeah. And yeah, Soundwave's definitely between Blaster and Soundwave. Soundwave is the more iconic communicator in Transformers. So,
well, Soundwave, thank you,
Charles. It's your birthday.
I'm a little bit miffed that Rewind is nowhere to be seen on the Blaster cover too.
Well, Rat Bat's nowhere to be seen on the Soundwave cover. So there you go.
Touche, Daryl. Touche.
At least all six Constructor Cons are on the second printing.
We'll get into that. All right, let's start off with the story. In the wilderness of the Northwest Territories of Canada, a young couple enjoys a quiet moment, taking in the natural beauty around them. But their peaceful moment is shattered by a creeping metallic mass coming out of the forest and swallowing everything in sight. The couple runs in terror right into the arms of Bumblebee and the other recently repaired Autobots. Bumblebee greets them cheerily, and Jazz warns them to go home and warn their neighbors to stay inside. The humans look up at the Autobots and flee in terror of the marauding Transformers. Jazz is puzzled by their reaction, and Mirage reminds him that all the humans are spooked by the recent oil refinery attack when Lazarus had mind-controlled Autobots and Decepticons alike wreak havoc. Now the humans don't trust the Autobots at all. Wheeljack quickly brings his fellow Autobots back on task. He's fitted each of them with a blaster that counteracts the cell growth of Megatron's metallic virus. But there's a catch. The blasters convert the Autobots' own internal energon into the antivirus. So the longer they fight the virus, the weaker they'll get. Wheeljack calculates that between the eight Autobots there, they have just enough energy to destroy the virus completely as long as they stop the spread here and now. But it will be close, and they can't afford any mistakes. As the Autobots start blasting, Jazz gets an emergency call from Trailbreaker in San Francisco. He tells Jazz the situation there is dire. Superion is down, and Prime and the Autobots are getting overrun by Megatron, Devastator, and the Decepticons. They need backup immediately. But Jazz tells them there's no one they can send. They need everyone to fight the virus, so they're on their own. Trailbreaker doesn't have time to lament his situation as he is about to be crushed under Devastator's foot. Trailbreaker's force field finally gives out and he's stomped on as Devastator continues his rampage. Sunstreaker and Sideswipe try to take Devastator on, but they are quickly smashed between his massive hands. Optimus Prime is the last bot standing. In a you've got the touch moment, Prime summons all his courage with an internal monologue about being a soldier and a leader. He transforms to truck mode, launches himself at Devastator using a broken highway overpass as a makeshift ramp, transforms in midair, and smashes into Devastator's chest. He quickly draws his blaster and fires point blank into Devastator's face, taking him out. Devastator collapses into the bay as Optimus Prime is thrown clear. Prime emerges from the water, hurt but still functional, and Megatron is there to meet him. Megatron is impressed with Prime's perseverance, but he still lost the battle. Despite Megatron having the upper hand, he still wants to offer Prime a deal. Back in Canada, the other Autobots are fighting valiantly against the metal virus. They're making progress, but also quickly running out of energy. Cliffjumper stumbles, nearly spent. Before he can get up to keep fighting, a squad of tanks from the Canadian military orders the Transformers to stand down, pointing the tank's turret directly at Cliffjumper's head, point blank. In the Pentagon, Spike Witwicky awaits his fate in a holding cell. He received a note saying, 3 o'clock, be ready, which he assumed was a note from General Hallow telling him the appointed time of his execution, since he knows too much. But he's wrong. At 3 o'clock, the door opens to the cell, and it's the creepy old janitor coming to help him escape. The janitor sneaks Spike out, hidden in the bottom of a food cart. He takes him to a closet where he stashed evidence of the Lazarus Project. The janitor explains that his brother was a technician who worked on this secret military project run by General Hallow and Adam Rook, the man who would later call himself Lazarus. They started the project to try and create their own super robot troops that could change shape just like the Transformers, but their efforts were all failures. So they adopted a different plan. Develop technology to control the Transformers themselves and use them as living weapons. After the Autobots finally won the war and captured the Decepticons, Hallow arranged to have experiments done in secret on the Decepticon prisoners to develop the control technology. It was successful, but now they had a problem. They had no way to use it since the Autobots were shortly planning to take all the Decepticons off Earth. So Hallow and Rook planned to sabotage the Ark II and sacrifice the human passengers in order to take all the Transformers for themselves. The janitor's brother was going to blow the whistle on the whole conspiracy, but he was murdered before he got the chance. But after the Ark II was destroyed, Rook betrayed General Hallow, stealing the control technology and leaving nothing for the U.S. military. So they needed Spike to help them wake up the deactivated Optimus Prime and, unbeknownst to him, recover the Lazarus tech. After finally hearing the whole story, Spike is enraged. He blames the janitor for not doing enough to stop Hallow and angrily attacks him. The janitor protests that he was scared for his own life after seeing what happened to his brother, and Spike just calls him a coward. He grabs the janitor's access keycard and plans to put an end to things himself, rather than run and save his own skin. Back in San Francisco, the Decepticons are mopping up the beaten Autobot forces. Megatron wants to show Prime that the human race he's fighting for just isn't worth it. Amidst the carnage, some humans take the opportunity to loot stores, rob their fellow citizens, leave other humans trapped under rubble to die, and the news media just films the destruction for ratings rather than helping people. Megatron presses his case that the humans are miserable creatures not worthy of Prime's sympathy. He urges Prime to join forces with him so they can rule the galaxy as father and son. Forge a new Cybertronian empire to conquer the universe. Prime hesitates, but he doesn't say no. In the Pentagon, at the Department of War Technology headquarters, General Hallow gets updates on the situation in San Francisco. His deputy urges an air assault to combat the Decepticon attack, but Hallow wants a more permanent solution. He gives the order for a nuclear strike on San Francisco. His deputy is horrified and refuses, but Hallow draws his firearm and doesn't give him a choice. He inserts the key to arm the nuclear warhead and orders an immediate missile launch on San Francisco. To be concluded in issue 6. So I was actually surprised at how much I enjoyed this issue. A lot of things came together. I had forgotten the plot twist that they did circle back around to where Lazarus came from. So it was nice to see that plot thread actually tied back into the story. I thought the whole battle was going pretty well. It was pretty well done. The one complaint I will have is that Optimus Prime is, he's drawn really weird. His transformation sequence, like his truck mode, just looks really weird. Like not like a real truck. There's just a little bit, the Pat Lee has some issues with perspective and proportions, things like that. And that's just really prominent on those two pages where you have Optimus Prime, doing his big damn hero moment there. But other than that, I thought it was a really well-constructed issue. I think there's a lot of action. There's some exposition. The plot moves forward. You've got a lot of things going on. And, then it ties up hopefully in the next issue. So, it was pretty enjoyable. I mean, compared to the rest of the series, I thought this was a pretty big high point. One thing I did want to note, like I mentioned, we mentioned it last week, how the cliffhanger was kind of not really a cliffhanger with Devastator. It was just Devastator looking up in the sky. So there was nothing really, there was no surprises coming there. And as I mentioned, there was a 2-month wait between that issue and this one. And there's actually a letter to all of Dreamwave's supporters in the comic written by Adam Fortier. And he mentions how they're going to start doubling up production so that the books don't get off schedule. And they said, oh, it was convention season. Roger Lee got married and some people got sick. So that's how things got delayed. So it was just interesting that they actually had a letter addressing the delay in the comic. So. Yeah, so pleasantly surprised. Good issue. I think we'll start with Mike since you haven't been on, but I'm hoping you got caught up on the other issues. Could you give us your overall opinion of the Dreamwave series so far? Were you collecting this back in the day, or did you pass this one by?
No, I certainly did collect them, and I hit it hard. I pulled a full Shelton on on every series that they did. So down in my basement in the long boxes, I have the like a full set of each of these, the Autobot and Decepticon covers. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I mean, I really did go in hard with these ones. I'll give you my opinion of what it was back in the day and my opinion now. So, you know, back in the day when this came out, this was like, this was the most amazing thing. And this was not something that we had ever seen before. Not certainly not something I had ever seen before. And just seeing it was amazing. And yeah, I mean, it was like, they could do no wrong. Like every page, every panel was this new adventure and this new thing, this like a little bit extra they added to the canon that was like, hey, this is amazing. Hey, you know, this page has all the mini bots on it. You know, I see Huffer for the first time. I see Cliff Jumper for the first time. Absolutely. Like back in the day, they really could do no wrong. With the benefit of hindsight, not even in worrying about what Dreamwave's fate was, I can the art, I can tell that the art really bothers me. And it's not even that it's objectively bad by any stretch, because it really isn't. I mean, in terms of artwork, it's decent, but I think when we see what IDW put out for artwork, and we see what artists are capable of and what we're seeing now, compare that to what came before it. It's not great. And I hate to even draw that comparison, because this was the first time we really started to see like really realistic or good looking artwork that was in a more modern style. But yeah, especially going through this issue, the big thing that really just bugs me is, and I know you guys had touched on it before, is size. Now, I know.
Size matters.
I know that Transformers have never been good with scale. I get that. 100% get that. But just looking at this, Bumblebee looks like he's 20 feet tall. I'm looking at the hood section of Bumblebee, like where his hood would be, and it's almost as tall as a full-grown adult. I don't know what kind of bug you guys have ever seen before, but I have never had the hood of a car come up to my like my chest. If it was like a large like truck or something, okay, sure, yeah, you know, we'll go with that. But it's a fucking bug, guys. Come on. It's not that big. I mean, seriously, I'm looking at, I think it's a page 2. Yeah, the second actual like artwork page. And just look at Jazz. Jazz is what? 30 feet tall? It's a friggin' Porsche. Even if you stretch out all of his pieces as far as possible, he's not going to be that big. Oh.
Mass shifting.
Yeah, everyone at all times. Oh, man. So artwork is certainly a bit of a rough patch for me. Story-wise, I don't really have much of a problem with it. It's the plot gets a tiny bit convoluted in places, but I mean, for the most part, it feels like a cartoon episode kind of put to a modern comic form. And I don't have a problem with that. It is what it is. You know, there's some little weird elements here and there, but for the most part, yeah. I mean, it's a cartoon plot. It's like, okay, cool. You know, that works. But yeah, it's just the artwork. The artwork is it's at times really good, and then at times just, like I'm looking at, what is it, page 1, 2, 3, 4. On Bumblebee's, like around Bumblebee's like chest, I got on his chest, like right next to his head, you can see like a whole bunch of like panel line details and everything. And it's like, hey, you know, those are really neat elements that he didn't need to put in, but they're there. So cool. Excellent. It works. Mm-hmm. And then you go a couple pages later, you take a look at Devastator, and just looking at, I'm looking at the shot right when Trailbreaker was like squished under his foot, The tire on Scrapper is bigger than the wrecked car next to him. I mean, seriously, that tire is like 10 feet. Now, don't get me wrong. I completely get that there is construction equipment that has tires that big, especially like those like huge, giant like construction dump trucks and stuff. Those things are massive. But yeah, this is way out of scale. Yeah.
Yeah, that, I mean, we talked about that last week. Yeah, the Devastator is, yeah, he's been eating his Wheaties, so he's, I don't know, he got some steroids or something. But.
What is it, page 6 or 7, like the big shot where Prime is facing down Devastator, like the single full page panel?
Mm-hmm.
It's in perspective, I understand that, but the buildings in front of him are 4 to 5 stories tall. Which means they look bigger than they actually are compared to him, which means that Scrapper's like the shin of Devastator, like Scrapper's like bottom third is 40 feet tall.
Yep.
All right. So I'm what's just going to keep on ranting. I'm just going to keep on ranting about his size if you don't, yeah. If you don't take this from me.
All right, Daryl, I'm going to guess that you were pleased with this issue.
I enjoyed it. I had fun with this issue. It was a good fight issue. I have two little critiques. One is that there's significant exaggeration going on with regards to the amount of tanks that the Canadian military has. We do not have three.
Do you have one?
We don't have those kind of early tanks, 2000s. No.
And, you know, Daryl, this is a Canadian company. Dream, they're all Canadian, so they should know better, right?
You think...
I think maybe they're exaggerating on purpose. Yeah.
I honestly don't remember Canada in recent memory having tanks like that. Canada's military is not tank bound. And the other one was the
moose bound. Moose bound.
Yeah, we're a moose people. The other one would be that I found it kind of funny because I was comparing when you were doing your review there. Hallow's Lazarus project for like building his own transforming robots is very much like when Hasbro decided to make their own figures in like 1986 instead of using Takara's figures and engineers. You know, they were Transformers, but they sucked. They still were technically Transformers, but kind of shitty. So I found that kind of funny, the little comparison there. All in all, I like the story in the book. The first shot you see of most of the mini bots and Jazz in them, that's a total just pose shot. Like none of them are even looking at the two humans that are coming up to them, right?
So true.
But I mean, I like the Devastator thing. Like the G1 cartoon, Devastator got huge, like huge, way bigger than any of his component parts could ever build. And I don't mind this at all. Like make him big, make him a crazy big. Even in the Devastation video game, he towered over building. So I have a lot of fun with this. The actual scene when he's like messing around with Sunstreaker and Sideswipe actually does remind me a bit of that one scene in the Devastation game. And that shot of him staring down Optimus Prime in the street, that just looks awesome. I think that's a great shot. So I like that a lot. And I remember reading this issue back in the day and when Prime kind of crashed into him and drew his gun and blew, shot him in the face. He was, you know, I remember thinking that was really awesome to see him to be able to do that. But yeah, I agree with you. Prime's just drawn really terribly in this series. So it's, you know, it kind of sucks a little bit, but, you know, all in all, I remember, you know, this issue is kind of fun and exciting. There's a lot of action in it, and yeah, I don't know. I had a lot of fun just reading it, and I don't particularly care for the way that they draw the humans. We've discussed it numerous times during the reviews of these books that they're very anime style, very Japanese art, and it's no big deal. They're not bad. It's not drawn, you know, badly. It's just they are very similarly, you know, drawn, their faces, and we've discussed that on end. It's just, you know, there can be variations, you know, when you're drawing a comic like this, you can, you know, make people look a little different maybe. But mm-hmm. Other than that, I find it, you know, quite entertaining.
Cool. All right, Jeremy, what do you think?
I mean, I agree. This was a more fun issue. Storyline wise, I liked, you know, like you said, coming back to the whole Lazarus stuff. And I don't know. I just enjoyed that plot twist. I did chuckle when I saw the tanks, and they were, I was like, okay. I don't believe it. But I don't know. Like, on the whole, the storyline is really kind of keeping me here. The art was okay. There was a few scenes, like Darryl said, that Optimus staring down Devastator image was a really nice shot. Really, I think the best art I like in this whole issue is that one with Megatron. It's like you're looking down at the scene, but Megatron has like all the Autobots captured, and he's beginning his monologue with Prime. I think that panel there is probably the best drawn panel of the book, in my opinion. And you're getting like Megatron and Optimus from the back, because I think my biggest issue with the way they draw Optimus is his whole chest area is just doesn't look right.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure in 2002 I was loving it. but I don't know. I actually read 5 and 6 kind of back to back this afternoon. Some things are blurring, but I don't know. I like where they're going. I like that you have introduced stakes with fighting the virus stuff. It does kind of show the bravery of these Autobots, that they're willing to sacrifice themselves, even though none of them seem to like the humans that much right now. I like the panel where, you know, Wheeljack is warning them and, you know, saying that, you know, this is what's going to happen, and they all kind of activate their guns and like, okay. But anyway, yeah, on the whole, it was a fun book. Art still has some issues, but what are you going to do? We've talked about that ad nauseum. So, and they actually left it on a good cliffhanger, so that's good.
There was one thing I forgot to mention, and this seems to be like a thing that Dreamwave has been doing. Okay, the example is when the tank went up to Cliff Jumper's head, and it just like bumped into his head, and like, all of a sudden he realized, oh, they're there. It's a friggin' tank. There is no way you would not notice a tank approaching you.
Oh, it's a Canadian stealth tank.
The Canadian stealth tank?
We have
Darryl, yeah.
we
can you confirm or deny?
We don't have tanks. We don't have tanks. You didn't see a tank. You didn't see a tank, Mike.
I think Cliff Jumper is supposed to be so low on energy, he's not really aware of his surroundings, so
Or there's maybe. Shot where Devastator's about to crush the two people on the rooftop, and then all of a sudden Superion's hand is there. And you expect me to believe that he didn't notice Superion coming up to him?
Devastator's an idiot. We know that.
I mean, I think also they aren't taking into account the fact that these big metallic creatures actually would probably make a lot of noise when they move.
Mm-hmm. I mean, this has been an issue from the start of the series. Like in the first issue, you have a mind controlled Megatron sneaking up on two guards in the forest and stepping on them. Yeah. And they don't notice him until Megatron's actually stepped on them.
I get that you're trying to kind of create these either dramatic moments or these comedic moments with the panels, and you know that's fine. Just it does stretch believability a little bit.
Yep. All right. We also have some thoughts from Yoshi about issue 5. So let's see if he agrees with our assessment or disagrees.
Do they involve Canadian stealth tanks?
Listen and find out.
Here we are at issue 5. I'm going to go with the cover with Devastator and Optimus Prime on it. I feel like all three covers for this issue were equally as impressive as each other. You really, to me, couldn't go wrong with any of them. I would have been happy with any of them. I got all three, but could have been happy with any of them. I guess the Devastator one with Prime and Megatron in the background more closely represents what happens in the story. But yeah, I guess I mean, they're all great looking covers, honestly. And with this issue, just when I thought I was out, just when I thought I was done with this, they sucked me back in. This was a wonderful issue. It's just so much story, so much, plot, so much everything, so much personality. Let's start with, you know, Wheeljack's weaponized antivirus guns that he came up with that sucks the energy right out of the Autobots as they try to defeat this virus. Very, very cool, very suspenseful, the whole thing. I love when he's like, you know, there's no halfway in this. It's either all or nothing. Are you guys in? And then there's just a panel of all the Autobots clicking on their weapons in agreement. Like, you don't have to ask us twice. We're in, Wheeljack. I just love that. And it's also, you know, their commitment to this is also further emphasized when from San Francisco, the call for help goes out to them, and they're like, nope, we're here. We're going to finish this fight. And it was just really, really cool. Also, maybe Daryl can answer this, but you know, so the virus fighting is happening in Canada, and you know, the Canadian army wants to bring a stop to the Autobots, presumably because they don't understand that the Autobots are trying to do something good here. But I was aware of the Mounties, Daryl, and I'm aware of the Royal Canadian Kilted Yaksmen, but I didn't know you had an army. Is this just part of this fiction that we're enjoying here, or is there actually a Canadian army? You might have to elaborate on that for me. The whole battle in San Francisco was epically told, I thought. You know, they really conveyed the enormity of Devastator and the Autobots realizing that they're on a losing end of this. And like a badass, Optimus Prime comes in and just levels the playing field a bit. The whole scene where he's fighting Devastator, I immediately thought of the game Devastation. If you watch the trailer, there's a very similar scene in the trailer where Optimus Prime goes flying through the air to fight Devastator. It's I wonder if this was inspiration for that. That's to me that just stuck out really clearly. And now we're left with Megatron having a almost a psychological battled conversation with Prime to convince him, like, just give up, man. Like, these humans aren't worth it. They're just mean and horrible flesh bags. And that's all we're seeing. We're not seeing the other side of the coin, the side that Optimus Prime is aware of. So I imagine that's going to be the resolve he finds in the next issue to continue battling Megatron. But man, what a good issue. The art was solid. The story was solid. I felt if there was one part that pulled me out of it, it was the conversation Spike had with the janitor that let him free from the military base. That is just, I guess he has every right to be, you know, like an fuck you, I'm leaving attitude. But it's just so unlike the Spike that we all know that threw me out. I guess, he seems like the very, very wishy-washy throughout this whole series. Like, I'm anti this, now I'm going to help, now I'm not, now I am. It's very, like, pick a lane and stick to it, dude. that's my mentality. So, yeah, very fun issue, very beautiful issue. I enjoyed it. I love the art. I love the story. Two thumbs up, and that's it.
All right. Well, I guess Daryl already confirmed Yoshi's suspicions about the Canadian military, so... we also got some feedback from Matt Moylan, the very same Matt Moylan who actually worked on this issue and worked at Dreamwave. I guess he's listening to the show regularly. So thanks, Matt, for listening to the show. I hope you're enjoying our reviews. Regarding issue 4 that we reviewed last week, and we mentioned, you know, why we were confused that there were only 5 Constructicons on the Decepticon cover instead of the regular 6. And Matt, he reveals the secret. He says, secrets revealed. Why were there only 5 Constructicons? Pat just forgot one. So, mystery solved.
It's kind of a, not as an exciting answer as I was hoping for, but
I think we all kind of figured
yeah.
it out.
Yeah. and Matt also gave us a preview for issue 5, since he knew, I think it was a reasonable assumption to assume we would review issue 5 in the next episode. And he says, I'll give you a factoid for your review of issue 5. Red Alert was not intended to appear in the story. Pat accidentally drew Sideswipe in 2 locations, so I recolored one of them to be Red Alert and also photoshopped him into an earlier page. So, yeah, and I guess I don't know who put this in the doc, but we have a link to a blog post that that Matt wrote from back on his little former site that gives further details on that story. So we'll link to that. Yeah. Well, thanks, Matt, for giving that added detail, since you were there on ground zero of the whole Dreamwave dealio there. So thanks for that added context and added detail.
Mm-hmm. Damn you for revealing our secret military. Our stealth hover tanks.
Well, Here's my explanation. Since this is in a universe where Transformers exist, and the all the governments of the Earth banded together to help the Autobots defeat the Decepticons a few years ago, that meant every government had to ramp up their military. So the Canadians, had to get their tanks ready to help the Autobots.
Alternate timeline.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
Hide them in mooses.
In Chaos Raven.
All right. Well, that is our review of Dreamwave issue 5. And next week we'll have the thrilling conclusion of this first volume of Transformers Generation 1 with the issue 6. So look forward to that.
Is it really going to be thrilling?
I can only assume. Well, Jeremy can tell us. He already read it.
I am not going to spoil it.
Thrilling.
You hear how excited he was there?
I think the Autobots win.
Jeremy was really excited. That's the biggest clue you're going to get.
I will say the president in this alternate universe has a defense minister. And that threw me off. I was like, wait, are we in Canada? No, we're at the Pentagon.
Yeah, the Canadians running Dreamwave are not too clear on how the U.S. military works, or the Canadian military, apparently.
Well, no, I think they know all the Canadian military all too well.
Listen, if I had stealth tanks, I'd be a badass.
I think those tanks should have been painted white, though, to be camouflaged with the snow. They're real stealth tanks.
They were camouflaged as shitty older tanks.
All right. I think we're at the end here. So let's move on to Transformers Media News.
All right. In media news this week, you want more information about stealth tanks? Here we go.
Oh, boy.
Oh. I would like to know more about your stealth tanks.
Charles has given me the look. I don't know how, but I'm feeling it. All right. In media news, we're getting another free printable Rescue Bots Academy coloring sheet. So you can print this off at home and give it to the little ones to color Hotshot or Optimus Prime from Rescue Bots Academy. It's fun. It's going to give them something to do for about 30 seconds. Hey, it's 30 seconds you didn't have before. So, you know, print it off, give them something to do. Add it to the, if you haven't done it before, add it to the list of all the other stuff they're giving you to print out. So there's a whole bunch of them. And you might have like a minute and a half or 2 minutes.
You're also going to use up all your ink.
Yeah, don't print it in color. It's so much color. There's so much color on this. Black and white, save yourself, please. Next up, we've got some concept art from Transformers Forged to Fight. And it is of Charles's favorite, Megatronus.
Ugh.
Hey. I can't do anything about the name, but the concept art makes this character look cool.
Yeah, he does look cool, but yeah, that name is terrible.
Don't fall prey to your misgivings about the name.
Oh, Mike.
Oh. It only gets better as it goes on.
This concept art is, the Megatronus in this is reminiscent of the Megatronus in the Machinima series. So it's,
who was voiced by Mark Hamill.
Yeah. So, hey, there you go. It's a Skywalker Joker.
He was just a Joker.
So take a look at that if you're interested in that. There's a cool picture of him in color. This you could crop out and print in color. That'd be kind of cool. In Transformers Cyberverse news, we've got episode 8 of Cyberverse that will likely be dropping tomorrow on Hasbro's YouTube channel. That's for the US only, as we've stated numerous times that the Hasbro YouTube channel hates the rest of the world. Our friends over at Moonbase 2 got a chance to interview May Cat, one of the writers of Transformers Cyberverse. So if you have some time, take a listen to their interview with May and, listen to some of her stories about being over at Cyberverse. I have not heard this yet, so.
Yeah, it's a good interview.
And that's it for media news.
All right, let's move on to convention news.
So we talked about this on the toy show in a lot more detail. Last week, after we had recorded, TF Nation announced that they were canceling their event this year. Daryl and I recorded something for our Donatrions about it. And then on our recording day today, Sunday, they've announced the TFN big broadcast of 2020, which all we know is going to be on August 15th. It's very likely going to be an online convention of some sort, guest schedule and more to be announced over the coming weeks. So, like I said, we discussed in a lot more detail, but I think we're all excited about this. And if you want to hear more of our thoughts on it, listen to the toy show this week, and you'll get probably more than you even wanted to know about about this. On a stateside, WonderCon, as we know, had been canceled, and the date has already passed. But they are putting out panels over the weeks from various publishers, and IDW did their Transformer panel that would have been at the show on YouTube this last week. And it's a really neat discussion. It's got Simon Furman, brain fart. It's got Simon Furman, Brian Ruckley, Tom Waltz.
Sam Maggs.
Yeah, Sam Maggs, who's doing the little My Little Pony Transformers crossover book. And she also is doing a couple issues of Galaxies coming up. And it was hosted by John Barber. And it was a really interesting discussion, I thought, about they all talked about kind of what, how they got into Transformers and more about their books. And I don't know, I found it to be a really interesting panel. So I'd recommend checking it out. Have you guys had a chance to watch it yet?
I have not, unfortunately, but I am going to.
Nope.
Same.
You have failed me for the continuing. Here's another panel that people probably haven't watched. Every year at San Diego Comic-Con, Mark Evanier does a cartoon voice panel. This year, he has done a couple online. This is the second one. And it has a number of voice actors, but of interest to our show, Greg Berger was on it, and also Rob Paulson. Both have done Transformer voices, and it was just, it's more of a general industry, like, kind of their experiences as voice actors over the years. But I found it to be very funny. They told lots of funny stories, and then they read it. They did a live reading of a Goldilocks and Three Bears story that was just really funny. So check it out. I really enjoyed listening to it this afternoon. And then finally, there's a show on YouTube called Conda Couch. Episode 4 just came out, and it had Flint Dilley and Paul Dini. And they capped themselves at talking about anything, I think, after 1982 was off limits. So lots of stuff about the 80s, stuff with like Flint's work on Transformers and G.I. Joe and stuff. And it was fun. So I'd also recommend checking that out. And I think that is it for convention news.
All right. And that will do it for this episode of Transmissions Alt Mode. Mike, the floor is yours. You can take a moment to plug anything you'd like to plug in addition to Empire of Rust.
Definitely Empire of Rust. So transmissionspodcast.com/rust. And of course, you can get it on any of the podcasting platforms. And if you'd like to follow me on Twitter, feel free to do so. It is Minervian, Minervion on Twitter. I'm not too active on there, but if you post a comment or post something up there, someone will very likely tell me about it or show it to me, and yeah, I will try to make mention of it. And if you want to talk to the cast of Empire of Rust, feel free to give them a shout out and just say hi on the Transmissions Discord channel. And I'm sure they're very friendly. They would love to say hi to you. And yeah, so all of that.
Awesome. All right, everyone. Thanks for listening, and we will see you next time. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Later.
Hey, everyone. Thanks for listening to this episode of Transmissions. But just because this episode is over doesn't mean the Transformers fun has to stop. Join us and other Transformers fans on our Discord chat server by visiting transmissionspodcast.com/discord. If you would like to learn more about how you could support the Transmissions Podcast, just visit transmissionspodcast.com/support. Thank you all for listening, and we'll see you again next week.
God damn it, Daryl. You know what the problem was? It was you and your politics there, Charles.
I know. You weren't so leftist.
And elitist, too.
Mm-hmm.
He's got a doctorate, so.
Mm-hmm. You should buy the rest of us 75-inch TVs, and we'll all feel like we're on the same level as you.
I don't want some elitist leftist charity.
I do.
Personally, I'm fine with a 70 inch.
How about 0 inches?
I was gonna make a sex joke there, but I'm not gonna now. I just want to talk Transformers. Let's do that.
Always
fantasizing about 0 inches.
Charles, why do you let them do this to you? Just go.
Okay, I'm ready.
He likes it. Deep down, he likes it.
What are you preparing? You're always preparing. Just go.